Let's get into a segment of Exchange Gold here. This is a favorite interview of Jeffrey Riley's between him and the author Alice Hoffman.
Lots of books come along with advice on how to live life better or more simply or more lovingly. Few books can do so in fewer than 90 pages. But Alice Hoffman achieves that goal in her book Survival Lessons. If the name rings a bell, Alice Hoffman is a celebrated and decorated author of fiction until now. She's written 21 novels, 3 books of short fiction, and 8 books for children and young adults. Practical Magic, Aquamarine, and The River King were all made into movies, and her books have been translated into many languages. Alice Hoffman, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So with that background, why write a nonfiction work?
Well, you know, I think I wrote it for myself, to tell you the truth, and it took me 15 years to write this little book. I was diagnosed 15 years ago with breast cancer, and at the time I felt like I wish I had a guide to how to respond and how to react. So it took me all this time to really write this book to myself.
Well, but there often are books out there, and you did go looking for them, right? I mean, did it say, you know, here's what you need to do when you're diagnosed, et cetera? What were you finding, though?
Well, I was finding medical books, and I was finding personal books, but I wasn't really finding what I was looking for. And that was, I wanted to know how people survived, you know, psychologically, emotionally, how they managed to get up every day. And that's what I was really interested in. And ever since, I've really been writing about survivors in my novels.
And this is not, for the folks who are trying to divine what the book is about from what we're saying, it's not a medical guide. It's not like talk to your doctor about this or ask about this test or that.
No.
Nothing like that. No, very much on the inside.
No, it's really, you know, I think of it as if I was writing a letter to my best friend, and my best friend had either just been diagnosed or just lost somebody she loved or had a terrible breakup, this is the letter I would write to her.
So, Alice, you write about other people in your family having had cancer, but was this still something of a surprise when it came to you?
You know, I actually think that horrible news and trauma is always a surprise. I always think, you know, all of our responses usually, it's like, this can't be happening to me. This happens to other people, but this doesn't happen to me. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, bad things happen to everyone. No one is immune. Everyone loses people they love. Everyone has to face tragedy. But somehow, you know, we convince ourselves that it's not going to happen to us. And when it does, it's kind of stunning.
I guess we wouldn't be as optimistic as we are if we entertained those thoughts on a regular basis.
I totally agree. I don't think we'd be able to go on. I think it's kind of a psychological trick that we play with ourselves in order to, you know, get out of bed every day and see all the good things that there are.
When the sun shines, you forget all the rainy days that came before.
Exactly. Exactly. And then when something, you know, terrible happens, whether it's a diagnosis or a loss, suddenly you're thinking, how do I do this? How do I get through my life? And my advice really has to do with choosing to spend each day, at least a little part of each day, doing something that you really love.
Choose is a big word in the book. Every chapter starts with the word choose. Why?
Well, I think when these sorts of things happen, I always feel, and I think a lot of people feel, that things are happening to us and that we have no control and that everything's out of whack and fate is fate and there's nothing you can do. And in some, you know, this is true in some ways, but I think what I'm trying to learn is that you can choose how you respond to these things. You can choose to still see beautiful things in the world and to still make beautiful things and to still choose to spend time with people that you really love.
You know, for some reason, when I realized the way that the chapters are arranged with, you know, choose heroes, choose to enjoy yourself, choose your friends, Abe Lincoln's quote came to mind, most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. And that really is making a choice right there.
I think that's true. And, you know, it's funny. There's also this notion that, you know, for writers at any rate, the writer isn't the person that you meet, it's the person that you read. And I always feel, you know, as a person, I'm very pessimistic. But as a writer, I'm very optimistic.
So describe the feeling of embarking on this. You mentioned 15 years getting survival lessons from where you were with breast cancer treatment to the actual completion of the book. Embarking on it, though, was there anger that you felt like you had to write it, sorrow at your situation, all of the above?
I think I finally felt free to write it. I think, you know, people deal with, you know, trauma in different ways. And for me, I'm very, very private. I mean, I grew up in the times where you didn't even mention if you had cancer or if you were getting a divorce, you know, everything was a secret. And when I was growing up, my best friend's mother was diagnosed with cancer and they never even told my friend. I mean, everything was very kind of held very close. And for me to be very open about my feelings, you know, in a nonfiction, very personal, intimate way, you know, it took a lot of time for me. And, you know, the thing about the book is, in some ways, it's a light book because it's about looking for lightness in these dark times.
It is light in every sense. I mean, it just, you know, the colors, the images, the weight of the book. I mean, all these things, it's light in every sense of the word, I think.
Yeah, and I also felt like I wanted to make something beautiful. I mean, it was really fun for me to kind of create the book and take the photographs and make a beautiful object and something that you would want to give to your best friend.
So just to be clear, Survival Lessons is not just for people coping with cancer or illness, right?
Right. I mean, I think really those coping mechanisms are the same no matter what your trauma is. And one of the best things I always think is to talk to someone who's been through it and survived. I mean, when I was diagnosed with cancer, I really wanted to talk to people who, you know, who were 15 years out and 20 years out. And I think, you know, it really is good advice to talk to other people.
We're revisiting the 2013 interview between Jeffrey Riley and Alice Hoffman. Just a reminder, we're not taking emails or phone calls this hour, and we'll be back after a short break. Stick with us. Welcome back to The Exchange. We now tune back into Jeffrey Riley interviewing Alison Hoffman about her book, Survival Lessons.
Alice, just in terms of basic process, after writing so much fiction, how different a task was this?
It was extremely different. I think, you know, it was more difficult for me, even though my novels are usually hundreds of pages, and this is a very small book. You know, it was difficult for me to really find the right voice, how I wanted to tell the story in a way. And I realized it was a very personal, personal voice.
So written in first person, ultimately?
Yeah, definitely.
So when we come back to talking about each chapter, starting with choose to enjoy yourself, choose your friends, choose to dream, choose something new, it's all about choices, choosing. Are we generally rather lousy at this as a species, you think, and that we're just going to take what comes along?
Well, you know, some people are and some people are amazing. I actually, I have a Facebook page called Alice Hoffman Survival Lessons, and people are coming on to share their stories and their stories of healing. And some people really, you know, are naturals. They know what to do. And some people need more help. I'm one of the people that needs help. I need to learn how to cope.
What was lacking there, do you think? I mean, were the coping skills just not good around the people you grew up with?
Well, you know, I think I was kind of a fixer. So I was the person that, you know, went out and found the doctor and, you know, found the veterinarian. I mean, I was there for other people, but I didn't expect to be a sick person. I was much better at fixing things. And the whole idea of kind of slowing down your life, which you have no choice sometimes, you know, all of a sudden, all the things that are so important, you know, your chores, your work, you know, people who are kind of acquaintances but that you're not, you know, really attached to, they kind of fall away and you're left with the really important things in your life.
So you had always been the one to take care of somebody else, and here it was that you had to move into the other position, which very, very different kind of dynamic.
Very different dynamic. And also, you know, I think for a lot of women, especially women with small children and women who are taking care of parents, you know, they're very busy with other people, and they don't stop to even think about what they need for themselves.
Well, a key relationship here, obviously, and this is in the chapter on Choosing Heroes, with your mom, that transformed greatly when you were 8 years old. How?
Well, my parents were divorced, and in those days, that was also, you know, a terribly big secret, and there were so few single mothers, and it was a very difficult and kind of surprising thing. She never expected that. It was like an earthquake in her life, and, you know, we kind of changed roles, but as it turned out, we also both had breast cancer at the same time. So it was, you know, I was always very close to her, but I was the caretaker in the relationship. And I had to really learn how to take care of myself as well.
You describe her as being pretty much knocked out flat, almost literally, by the divorce. And that went on for a while. She did eventually bounce back, though. And again, this is in the chapter on heroes. Did she eventually become one of your heroes?
She's totally one of my heroes. You know, sometimes I think with your parents, and especially with girls and their mothers, everything that you hate about your mother, you grow to admire when you become an adult. Because it's very hard to understand how difficult it is, you know, to be an adult.
Right, right. And we find that a lot with our kids, don't we?
Yes.
It's like, come on, I got to put up with this. Now you have to, too. What does, just in terms of generally choosing heroes, and what does having heroes do for us?
Well, I think, you know, it lets you see how other people manage to get through their lives. I mean, in a way, we're in this alone. You know, we're in our battles and our traumas alone, but there are also, you know, mentors and heroes and teachers that can show us the way and show us the path. And, you know, I think it's extremely helpful to look towards what other people did in dark times.
It looks like Anne Frank, as in the Diary of Anne Frank, was your first hero. Good place to start.
Very good place to start because, I mean, the thing about when you read the diary, it's so optimistic and so beautifully optimistic in such a horribly brutal time. And, you know, she had such faith in the world, and it really, you know, I think for me as a young girl, reading her really gave me a lot of hope.
Hope. What were the things you felt like you had to hope for that would change in your own life, or was it just about having a bright future?
I think it was about having a future, trying to see the beauty in the world. That was the main thing, I think, for me. That, you know, no matter what's happening, you have this one day that you are alive today, and that, you know, it's hard to stop and remember that sometimes, I think.
As you looked around at your own life, as you read about Anne Frank's life locked up in the apartment in Amsterdam, was there anybody in your life like her?
Well, I think, you know, for me, the person that I was really, really closest to was my grandmother, who was a Russian immigrant. And I'm very, very interested in the survival stories of immigrants, because I think the stories that happened, you know, for our grandparents are still happening today. And actually, I'm writing a novel that will be out in February, which is all about the immigrant experience in New York. It's called The Museum of Extraordinary Things. And it's very much about how difficult it is to make that transition, come to this country with nothing.
And they really did. I mean, basically, with not much more than what they had on their backs and what they could carry in their hands.
Yeah, and for me, my grandmother, who also had breast cancer, was somebody who always thought about doing things for other people. You know, even when she was well into her 80s, she was volunteering at an old age home. I mean, for her, part of the way of survival was to always be doing things for other people.
I want to make sure we give her full credit. Grandmother Lily is what we're talking about here, right?
That's her, yes.
And but you also talk about your sister, Joanne.
Yes,
heroes within your own family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was my sister-in-law, and, you know, it was just a terrible time in my family. She had brain cancer and did not survive, but she was an extremely positive person. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I say in the book that illness and trauma kind of, you find out who you really are at your core. And it really can, you know, it can bring out some pretty amazing things in people.
although, and I'm, you know, there are lots of other great quotes in here, but the one that always sticks with me, and it's not from this book, is the truth will set you free, but first it will make you miserable. So I can imagine.
It's true.
So there must have been a period right after the diagnosis of the breast cancer in particular when you were, I don't know what you were feeling, but I mean, it would have been down for sure at first. I mean, was that the case? And then you had to figure out how to climb back up out of that?
Well, I think I was floored. You know, I think there's a reason they use that term. You know, I literally felt like, you know, I just couldn't get off the floor. And I think that's true for most people when they first get some kind of horrible, unexpected news. But I think, you know, my first impulse was to talk to survivors. And I belong to a survivor group. I still do. And I think, you know, no matter what happens, I've heard this from people who've lost children, that they feel that, you know, it's only within a group of other people who've experienced a similar situation that they feel really free to really talk about their feelings and that they really can hear how other people survived a similar experience.
I can imagine the survivor group itself, though, has been a real learning experience because not everybody does. And so I'm sure there have been members of the group who were there and are not.
Right, that's true. And I think, you know, we kind of bond together more if somebody gets a recurrence. And, you know, you kind of never know what's going to happen in your life. But we also have a great time together. And, you know, people have heard us out at restaurants, like, laughing like mad, and they, you know, it doesn't feel like a survivor's group to them. But, you know, we know that we have to enjoy that night together.
It's one of those places where you get little looks from people thinking, why are they all laughing so hard?
Exactly, yes.
Alice Hoffman's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her nonfiction book is called Survival Lessons. It grew out of her experience fighting breast cancer. That was started 15 years ago. As you heard, she's in a survivor group still. All kinds of things to learn about life from this book. It's a very short book, very simple, and it's elegant in its design. This interview on the Exchange is pre-recorded, so the usual give and take is not present. We're not giving the phone number and the email address because we can't take any new phone calls or emails today. Judy in Grants Pass sent us an email. She writes, "You are an inspiration. Thanks. Does your book contain a chapter on choose to wait it out? Because that is what my way of surviving anxiety attacks."
Well, thank you for that message. You know, choosing to wait it out is very smart because sometimes, you know, when you respond immediately, you know, you don't let things settle in and you don't know how you really feel about things. I tend to be very super reactive. And I think that's very wise counsel on her part to say, you know, just wait it out. You know, sometimes things do get better.
And Judy finishes up with another quote here. She says, "We cannot change the direction of the wind, but we can adjust our sails."
Brilliant. I think that's what it's all about. Right. It's how you respond to it. You can't change certain things. You can only change the way you respond to them.
And that is really the core of the book, Survival Lessons, is that there are some really awful things that happen, but how you respond is really what says a lot about you. And there's this another quote in here, and who wrote this to you? "Life is beautiful, just very unfair."
It was a friend of mine, as she was very, very ill, and she didn't make it. And I love the fact that she still saw that life was beautiful. She was a very positive, amazing person. And I try to think about that quote from her every single day.
It's one of those things you can kind of love and hate at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I mean, you can be angry at life for being unfair, but you know, you have to still see that it's still beautiful.
All right, so one of the other chapters in here is called Choose to Enjoy Yourself. Alice, are you an eat dessert first person?
Definitely. But, you know, I think when these things happen, you feel like you can't enjoy yourself. You just have to respond to the trauma, and you kind of forget to just look outside the window, just, you know, take a walk. Just the very simple things in life, like, I think it's very important to try to make time for them.
And again, this is not a book about, you know, specific steps to, you know, deal with your doctors or anything like that. It's really just about general ideas, general concepts. There are pictures in here. There are instructions for knitting a cap. We'll get to that later. But there's also, you have Julia Child's recipe for boiling an egg. You knew her?
Well, a little I did, because we both actually went to the same hospital and we did fundraising for the same hospital. So I was lucky enough to get to know her, and my son also was in a cooking class that she gave, and it was a class all about eggs, everything you could possibly do with eggs. I mean, she was an amazing person and a real survivor. So I really admired her, and I wanted to include this perfect egg recipe from her.
Where did her survival skills come from?
You know, I really don't know, but she was an incredible person, and she gave so much to the community. And, you know, she really, she was just, I think she was a hero for so many people.
She really was, for sure. And there's another name that you mentioned in the same chapter on choosing to enjoy yourself. And pardon me if I mangled the name, Macklin Bocock Girard.
Yes, she was a very close friend of mine, and she was really the wife of my mentor, my teacher at Stanford when I started out being a writer, and we were very close friends, and she unfortunately had Parkinson's that hastened the end of her life, but she was an incredible person. And one of the things in the book that is one of my favorite things that I share is that when I got married, as my wedding present, she gave me her brownie recipe, which is the best in the world, in my opinion. And I've had a lot of brownies, so that is also in the book.
What's the secret to the brownie recipe? What's in it that makes it so great?
You have to make it to figure it out. But the thing about these brownies is that they don't look beautiful. You know, they look like they're falling apart, but they are unbelievable.
Well, there's a whole lot of life right in there, isn't there? There's a lot of stuff contained in parts of the world that we don't think are beautiful, that are just great for us.
Right, exactly.
The chapter on choose your friends, and this gets fun because you get into the subject of if you could invite anyone to a dinner party, who'd it be? In your case, who would it be?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it changes week to week. Mm-hmm. About, you know, I certainly would want to invite certain writers who are dead and gone to question them and find out how they wrote their amazing books. And I also, like, I realized when I was ill that I really, really like talking to teenagers. I love how alive they are and how positive they are. And even when they're depressed, I feel like they're so pointed towards the future. That I think I'd probably invite, you know, a couple of great writers and a couple of teenagers.
Teenagers, though, as you point out, they can be kind of depressed and they can be a bit of a downer, but you feel like they're being positive even through that?
I feel like they're so alive, even when they're depressed. I feel like, you know, they are the future. And even if they're depressed, there's so much hope for what can happen to them. And I just, you know, I feel like my teen readers especially, sometimes I've written for teens and they also read my adult books, you know, they're so passionate. And I feel like, you know, sometimes as adults we kind of lose that passion.
Absolutely. Now, you say you can relate to Emily Dickinson, though, one of the writers you mentioned who you might like to invite to a dinner party who's dead and gone. How do you relate to Emily Dickinson?
Well, you know, I think that she had a very difficult life, a very fearful life, and yet she managed to see incredible beauty. You know, it's funny because I think, you know, in her life, for many years she didn't go out of her room. But she also wandered through the woods during many years and collected more wildflowers than I think anybody else ever has. So, you know, no matter what, she still saw what was beautiful.
So there really is a live-in-the-moment theme throughout the book, enjoy the now, but how do you balance the now and the later that you're hoping you have? I mean, you can't have a big dessert every night, can you? You can't have those brownies every single night.
No, you do pay a price for that,
right,
as I have. You know, I think, you know, this is something that I try to remind myself all the time and that I personally have difficulty with, and it's one of the reasons I wrote Survival Lessons, is I have to remind myself to stay in the here and now. You know, one of the things that I think really helps with that is being with a dog, because dogs are so present. You know, they're so in the here and now that I think when you're with a dog, you have to be there right with them. You know, I think it's true with babies. I think it's true with teenagers. There's certain, you know, certain situations that make you be very present.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on the dog part because of all the, you know, the things that you can do. I mean, accidentally, like the times that you, like, you know, bang the dog's head with the door or something and a human being be like, ow, that hurts. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, they'll talk to you again. The dog's just like, hey, okay, it's fine.
I know, and I think, you know, when you're walking with a dog out in the woods or something like that, you know, you're aware of things that you wouldn't be. You know, you might be so inside your own head and worrying about problems and worrying about kind of dark times, but the dog is so there and so in that moment in the woods that, you know, I really admire that.
There's a section in the book, Alice, about specifically about what happened with some of your friends as you entered treatment for breast cancer. Some of them just weren't there for you. I mean, is that, did you find that that's fairly typical, people who just can't deal with the idea of sick people?
I do think that's typical. I think some people disappear, no matter what your trauma is, whether it's cancer or some kind of loss or some kind of illness. I think some people disappear for whatever their own personal reasons are, you know, their own history, their own problems. And some people really surprise you with their loyalty and their love. And then some brand new people appear that you wouldn't have expected. So I think, you know, it's kind of a journey. I think, you know, looking back on certain things, I wish I hadn't judged people's reactions, because now I understand, you know, sometimes it has nothing to do with you. You know, people carry their own histories around with them, and they're also trying to survive.
So it's not so much a case if they couldn't deal with me and my sickness, they couldn't deal with some stuff in themselves and their own background.
That's what I think now, yeah.
We're revisiting a 2013 interview between Jeffrey Riley and Alice Hoffman. Just a reminder, we're not taking emails or phone calls this hour. We'll be right back after a short break. Stick with us. Welcome back to The Exchange. We now tune back into Jeffrey Riley interviewing Alison Hoffman about her book, Survival Lessons.
So, Alice, that particular chapter we just mentioned, Choose Whose Advice You Take, you obviously revered Grandma Lily's advice, but was she always right?
Yes, she was. Our grandmothers are always, always right. I think she was right in terms of, you know, her feelings of love and protection. And, you know, I always feel that, you know, she was the person that was always behind me. And I always feel that if you have one person who has faith in you, you can make it through. That's all you need, is one person who really believes in you. And for me, she was that person.
But it has to be somebody outside yourself. I mean, you have to have faith in you too, obviously. But
I guess. Well, if you don't have faith in yourself, it helps to have somebody else who does.
Right. there's a whole chapter here on choose your relatives as well, which is an interesting concept. But you just pointed out Joanne was you call her your sister, but she's actually your sister-in-law.
Yes.
You and Joanne clearly crammed a lot of life in her final months, didn't you?
You know, what was really beautiful to me about Joanne, and she was a very positive person, you know, when she was told by her doctors that she, you know, she wasn't going to make it, and that they suggested to her that she spend the summer, you know, kind of seeing to her bucket list all the things that she wanted to do. And she said to them, I've already done everything. And I thought it was a beautiful thing to say. She felt that she had really lived a full life. And she just really wanted to spend, you know, her last months with her children. But I think there aren't that many people who can say that. And it was a wake-up call to me to hear her say that. And I realized that, you know, you don't have all the time that you think you have. And if there's something that you really want to do, you better do it soon.
Had she gotten to most of the, I mean, had she done the stuff on her bucket list because she knew that her time was coming to a close, or because she just lived such a full life all the way through?
I think she lived a full life all the way through. But, you know, even if you haven't lived a full life all the way through, I think you can stop and reconsider. You know, it's not too late. And, you know, I certainly had a list when I was diagnosed of things that I now realize that I wanted to do. And, you know, I'm slowly going through that list and, you know, trying to do as much of that as I can.
When we talk about things, though, like bucket lists and people you'd invite to a dinner party, if you could invite anybody throughout history, or favorite songs, I mean, these things do change from week to week. So do you have an actual physical bucket list and you're constantly scrawling things off or writing new things on?
Well, I had three things that I really wanted to do that I realized that I had never done. And I thought to myself, I can't believe I'm going to die and I haven't done these three things. And the first was, I know this is going to sound very silly to you, was I really wanted to swim with dolphins. I mean, I really did. I felt like, I can't believe I'm going to leave this earth and I'm never going to have had that experience. And that was the first thing that I did as soon as I could. You know, I arranged that for myself and I did it. And it was a really magical, wonderful experience.
Great.
And the second thing was, I couldn't believe I had never gone to Venice. And so a few years ago, I finally went and it was everything that I had dreamed it would be. And I was so glad that I had done it. So I have one more thing of that list of three things, and I'm waiting. I don't want to do it too soon.
Mm-hmm. Are you sharing that with us? Or
no. That's my secret.
You want to do it? Sorry, skydiving, climbing Mount Everest? I mean,
not climbing Mount Everest, no.
All right. So swimming with dolphins and Venice. Okay, so two of the three so far. But, you know, here again, this gets into the chapter on choose how you spend your time. But that gets me back to the earlier question about, obviously you can't have dessert first every day or have those brownies every day. Do you have to hold anything back for, you know, cleaning your house or taking care of your recycling or things like that?
Yeah, you know, I had a friend who said something really interesting when he was ill, and he said, you know, that he tried to live each day as if each day was an entire life, so that you do everything in that one day. You know, you do take care of some of your responsibilities. You know, you do something beautiful that you want to do. You spend some time with somebody that you care about. You know, it's not like the whole day is spent doing one thing, but each day is a little life.
And so how much has that changed your perspective? I mean, there are things that you used to worry about. You had to do this today, and you just go, what the heck, you know? I can wait till tomorrow.
I think I try. The thing that I try most to do that I didn't do before is I write a lot about forgiveness, because I think forgiveness is very important and something that we don't necessarily think about all the time. And for me, it was a real stumbling block. And I just remember when my sister-in-law was ill, I remember one of the nurses saying, you know, if there's anybody that you're still angry at, we're going to write their name on a piece of paper, we're going to burn that paper, and you're going to let it go. And I thought that was really great advice. I think I'm still learning this, but I'm trying to just let things go.
And then there's a whole chapter on choose to forgive. And so who are the people we generally need to forgive? Are they the people we grew up with or love partners or just any combination?
Yeah, I think it's different for every person. You know, I think these are things that are super personal, super intimate. And, you know, I think most people know who are the people that hurt them or who are the people they wish they could forgive. And, you know, I think there comes a point where that becomes a burden to carry that around and you just want to be free.
Back on the choose how you spend your time, you do go off on a little bit of a riff here about a lot of time spent reading books. But, you know, you love books. Obviously, you make lots of books. I mean, are there any regrets about time you spent reading or regrets about time you spent with individual authors?
Well, yeah, I did spend a lot of my life reading, but for me it was kind of like a life raft, and I really needed to kind of escape into books. I think there are some times when I wish I had been more in the world, but I don't think it would have been possible for me at certain times in my life. I really found out about the world through reading.
Let us take a call for you. Here is Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Alice Hoffman, the author of Survival Lessons.
Howdy. This sounds like a dandy fine book, and more than just a way to escape catastrophe or deal with it. It, from the sound of it, seems like it would be a pretty good prescription for just living your life day to day and having a more fulfilling experience out of it.
I totally agree with you. I think it's that's a really nice way to put it. I think a lot of us need a lesson on how to kind of enjoy our lives and have life be kind of sweeter. And I think that's what this book is all about.
Steve, thanks for the thoughts on that. And as we pointed out, this is not just a book for people who are trying to survive cancer or some other dreaded illness, which raises the question then, where is it placed in bookstores and libraries? Which section does it end up in?
Gee, I don't know. I think it has to go into a couple of sections. You know, I'm not sure, because in a way it's kind of a memoir, but in a way it's really, I think it's kind of inspirational, or that's what I hope it will be, and that's what it is for me.
Okay, it's a memoir, it's a self-help book, it's all kinds of things, which reminds me of one of my favorite jokes, which is the guy walks into the bookstore and says, can you tell me where the self-help books are? And the bookkeeper says, well, sure, but wouldn't that be defeating the point?
Yes, true. You know, it's funny, because in a way it is self-help, because really, you know, as I said before, I wrote it for myself. I needed the help.
Well, and then, so this gets into one of the chooses, which is choose to love who you are. And it seems like this is probably the hardest one for a lot of people.
Oh, I think it's very difficult for a lot of people. I mean, for some people, it's not true. But for a lot of people, you know, they deal with so much regret and, you know, I wish I had done it this way, or I've failed in this way. And, you know, I think, you know, as you get older, you realize, you know, we all fail in, you know, 100 different ways. And even if you're trying to do your best, you know, everyone has some regrets. Everyone fails. But, you know, that really is kind of part of being human.
And one of the ways in which we let our audience know that this interview was coming was to use the quote, into each life a little rain must fall.
Yeah.
Which is, that's just the way it works, unless you live way out in the desert, I suppose. But but even then, we're talking about metaphysical rain, too. So there is this chapter on choose to accept sorrow. Who was Viktor Frankl, and why is he in this chapter?
Well, you know, he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and it was a book, one of the two books that I read when I was getting radiation. And he was a psychiatrist who went through the Holocaust and who lost everyone in his family, everyone he loved. And Man's Search for Meaning is really an exploration of trying to find out why we have sorrow, why we have to deal with sorrow. And basically, you know, his thesis is, we have sorrow because it defines who we are. You know, we would not know who we really are at our core selves, if we didn't have to deal with sorrow. And that is the way of the world. And there's nothing we can do about it. All we can do is be our truest selves.
And you get real clues to who your true self is through the way you handle adversity.
I think so, yeah. I think that's true.
And there's another chapter in here about choose to tell your own story. This was a big one for you in treatment, as I understand.
You know, it was a big one for me, and I think it is for a lot of people. And I think, you know, at a lot of centers, bereavement centers, cancer centers, there's been a trend, and I think it's a good one for people to get together and to have writing workshops. Because I think somehow telling your own story not only defines it for other people, but it also helps to define it for yourself. And I think it really matters to write things down.
Were there times when you approached survival lessons from a different voice? I mean, you mentioned struggling with finding the one here. I mean, did you at one point write it as a story of some other person, some other Alice Hoffman, or third person kind of thing?
It's very interesting that you would say that, because after my diagnosis, I did have a lot of characters who had cancer. And it started out with the main character, and then it kind of moved further and further away. And I spoke with my oncologist about it, and she said, you know, cancer doesn't have to be your whole book. It can be a chapter, and you will move farther away from it, which is what happened to me. But I definitely wrote about it in a lot of different ways and a lot of with a lot of different characters.
Choose to plan for the future. Two questions here. One is, you still have to live for today. You're trying to make a, you know, as we talked before about trying to live each day as if it's a life. But were there times in treatment when you thought there was no future?
Definitely. And I think that a lot. You know, I am a pessimistic person, and I have to remind myself constantly about the future. And I remind myself about these lessons, you know, every day. And they're hard lessons for me to learn. So I felt like if it could help me and if it could work for me, then survival lessons might be able to help someone else as well.
When you write about to choose to give in to yourself, Alice, what does that mean?
I really think it means choose to be able to enjoy yourself, which is hard for a lot of people. and just to take time for yourself and do something that's just fun. And especially in dark times or when someone else is sick, you know, I think it's equally hard. It's hard to be the sick person, but it's also hard to be the person who loves the sick person. And you feel guilty and you feel like you can't take any time for yourself. You can't play a basketball game. You can't go for a walk. I mean, I think you really have to choose to enjoy yourself because you're here now. And this is all, really all we have.
The people who were taking care of you when you were sick, did you let them eventually do the things that you were doing for other people when they were sick?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah.
You didn't put obstacles up and say, hey, can I just give me my space, get away, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, I probably did put obstacles up because I think people tend to do that. You know, they tend to hide their true feelings, and it's hard to come to terms with things. But in the end, you know, really all you have are the people that love you, and that's really the most important thing.
Okay, we mentioned the beehive hat earlier. There's instructions.
Yes.
Tell us about the beehive hat.
Well, that actually is a pattern by my cousin, Lisa Hoffman, who's a wonderful, amazing knitter. And, you know, I just felt like, you know, when I was ill or whenever I'm in trouble, you know, the littlest gift can really make a huge difference, getting it or giving it. And I think giving a gift is much better. And so there's this wonderful pattern in the book for a beehive hat, which makes a great gift for anybody. I mean, it's certainly if you have cancer and you want to wear a hat, this is a great hat, but it's just a very loving gift.
How are you doing? I mean, you mentioned being in a survivor group still. We're talking very much past tense about cancer treatment. You're okay now? Your margin's clear? Everything's good?
Yes, everything's good. But, you know, in a way, I feel like we're all survivors. And that's one of the things that I realized, that every day we're all survivors.
Well, it's an amazing book, and not very long, about 83 pages, I think. It's called Survival Lessons. Alice Hoffman, its author, our guest. She's coming out with the Museum of Extraordinary Things in February. Alice, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.